Solar PV Cast by Shift, a podcast exploring solar energy and the role it plays in improving our lives and our planet. Here's your host, Chris Palliser.
Hey, what's going on? It is Chris. It's back for another episode of the Solar PV Cast. It is brought to you by Shift. For all your solar and energy storage needs in Canada, go to shift.ca. Now, I'm saying in Canada because I'm really excited about this episode. We are getting the perspective from somebody in the United States. And I say this because we often talk on this podcast about how America is kind of 5 to 6 years ahead of us. So it's kind of a glimpse into the crystal ball, if you will, of the solar industry and all things to do with it. So this episode today, we are joined by Ed Rotman, CEO of Chroma Energy, Chroma Energy Group. Ed, thanks so much for joining the podcast for this conversation. Ed is the CEO and you're based in Knoxville, Tennessee. Right out of the gate, just give us a little intro on yourself and how you found yourself in the solar world.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me, Chris. It's an honor to be here and happy to maybe, you know, learn a little bit about what Canada has going on in the solar and maybe provide a little bit of insight to what's going on down here in the United States. And so, my background or how, so I just started Chroma. It's about 11 months ago. Next month it'll be our 1 year anniversary, and that's kind of a cool milestone for me and the team. A lot has happened over the last year. And honestly, I've been passionate about renewable energy for a long time. And I'll tell you a little bit about the journey. I'll backtrack a little bit, but, as I've learned, it is one thing to be interested, to be passionate and to read up on something, but then to be doing it, to use the term, to be grinding it out every day in the industry is completely different, but it is, still exciting, a lot going on. Regionally, it's very different in the United States, but we can get more into that in a little bit. So we are based, as you said, in Knoxville, so we're in the Southeast. And the Southeast has a different type of atmosphere than some of the other parts of the United States. I'm looking forward to kind of getting into that. And it's been a fun ride the last year. I took maybe a little bit of a non-traditional route. So I worked for the Department of Defense for a long time in Huntsville, Alabama, and I was working for the Missile Defense Agency. And I also lived up in D.C., worked for a consulting company up there briefly, and I'd always been passionate kind of about the geopolitical side of things. Just how international relationships, national security, all those different things. And that led me down that path. And then got married, met my wife in business school in Nashville, and she was from the Knoxville area. And so after working for the Department of Defense for a little while, moved to Knoxville, and her and I both got involved in working for a Caterpillar dealership. And so, you know, when you think of Caterpillar construction equipment, you think of kind of, you know, mining, fossil fuels, diesel combustion engines, and stuff like that. And that's all accurate, but a little niche division in the Caterpillar dealership was generators. And so I was the COO of Stowers Machinery. Fantastic. Caterpillar dealership in based in East Tennessee, and was working with kind of a niche division called the generators. We call it power systems. And so through working with standby backup power and meeting with utility companies, meeting with industrial customers, and kind of learning about some of the potential grid stability issues that were already here and definitely coming down the road, because by 2035 in the United States, they say we're going to need about 50% more capacity on the grid just due to the electrification of everything in society. And by 2050, we're going to need double. And so seeing the strain through the Caterpillar generator side, I just became very passionate about, you know, what is the solution to this? When you hear about those things, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, okay, so centralized power plants, and these massive transmission systems, are they going to get us to where we need to be? And then you kind of have that geopolitical thing, you know, that I mentioned, kind of referenced about my previous job at the Department of Defense. And I just feel like the energy sector, specifically the renewable energy sector, is going to be such a pivotal part of the next 10, 20, 30 years, how we play out on the global, you know, side of things. And then just domestically, how do we figure this out? Because as we start to dial down, which has probably been one of the most reliable and affordable sources of electricity, which is fossil fuels, we know we're going to need more. We're certainly not going to need less. How does renewable energy play? How does clean technology play in that? And so really, after giving that a lot of thought, I was like, you know, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm passionate about. It's very interesting. It's challenging. And so I started Chroma 12 months ago, left Stowers Machinery, loved working with my wife, and I miss that. I do.
Really?
And then, yeah, I know, you know, it's funny. People are like, ooh, man, I get a lot of questions like, man, I'm impressed and surprised.
Yeah, that's
great. You could work with your wife. That'd be challenging for me. And no, I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we want many discussions. We kind of both knew this was the path. I was always kind of wired to kind of work in a startup environment. I love it. So yeah, I started Chroma.
Incredible.
And Chroma is an EPC. So I wasn't overly familiar with that acronym when I started a year ago, but it's engineering is the E, procurement. So we source all the material, and then C is the construction. We actually build. So we kind of turnkey install renewable energy systems. A lot of our business currently is solar. So we'll design a system. If you have 30 acres, we'll kind of go through the process of designing it, telling you exactly how many megawatts you could get. We'll source the material, and then we do the civil, we do the mechanical, we do the electrical, we do the interconnection, and we actually put the system up. And we focus a lot on utility scale. So that's kind of the big systems. We do some distributed generation, and then we also are starting to play in the commercial and industrial markets for the private sector and for the end user. So a lot going on. Does a lot of information. Sorry to be long.
No, it's good. No, it was great. It was engaging. I mean, what a ride you've been on, man. And what a big leap. You know, you obviously believe in renewable energy to make that big transition and launch Chroma Energy Group and start that journey. How has that been for you kind of on the day-to-day? You know, you're obviously confident enough in the industry yourself, but that learning curve, now that you're in it and doing this, what's that been like?
Man, it steep, challenging, but exciting. I mean, that is kind of what kind of wakes me up every day and gets me going and gets me excited is the innovation, the change, how, you know, pivotal, how important I believe this is. And just, you know, kind of when you're out there and, you know, people know a little bit about it, but, you know, it's to me, it's kind of what they hear in sound bites from the news. It's been a little politicized. It's sometimes a little bit emotional. And so when you're actually dealing with it, there's a lot to it, and it's been great. And so, you know, we've got 13 employees at Chroma. And so I quickly realized it is one thing to enjoy and be passionate about it, but when you're actually hooking these big systems up, speaking of the learning curve, there's a big one, and it is hard to get that coming out. You just can't get that knowledge of how to install these big systems. So I actually acquired a small EPC that did exactly what we did, based here in Knoxville. And they were called Efficient Energy of Tennessee, a fantastic company, 10-year track record. So instilling their expertise and, you know, work ethic with Chroma's culture was definitely a big part of what I focused on the first 5 to 6 months. And I cannot say enough about the team and how we assimilated that acquisition. But that really gave us track record, and some street cred and that expertise. And so, yeah, it's been a lot going in the last 12 months, but I feel like now we're clicking and we're all moving in the right direction. So it's fantastic.
What about the competition? I mean, again, for those listening, wherever you are, I'm coming at this from a Canadian perspective. Like I mentioned off the top, kind of, you know, we're 5 to maybe 8 years behind. What's the competition? Because you're right. Everyone is aware now that we need something else. We need to diversify our energy portfolio. We have to look at other alternatives. Solar is obviously a big focus. What's the competition? Is everyone jumping into this industry in Tennessee?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I would say the Southeast is a little bit behind some of the other regions. It really is different than, you know, by region. You have some local and state maybe incentives that drive and some regulations and some policies. You know, and so that has really pushed, we'll call it the western side, Arizona, Colorado, California. They're a little bit of ahead of where I would say we are in the Southeast. And, you know, and honestly, what's driving it in the Southeast to me, and this is fascinating, is the private sector. And so it is companies, you know, Meta, Facebook made a huge investment in Tennessee, and them building this facility north of Nashville was contingent on PVA providing 200 megawatts of clean energy, which was solar. And then Ford made another massive investment in West Tennessee, where they're going to build their Ford Lightning electric trucks, and it's called Blue Oval City. And that again was contingent on PVA providing 200 megawatts of clean energy for Ford. And so when you have the economic development coming in and driving it, it's a little bit different than I think some of the, you know, the motivators and the reasons why they're doing it in other places. You know, you'll have some mandates and some regulations, which I think is one way to drive behavior. But when you have, to me, the free market and private sector driving the investment through economic development, that's sustainable and it's a really good thing. But the Southeast is a little bit further behind some of the other regions because of that. So apologize, it was a little bit of a tangent. But to get back to your question, the competition is, yes, there is. It is. There's a lot of people wanting to get into this space. And so what we try to market and try to, I guess, communicate is that we're not this kind of overnight company that was just created. We have a track record. We've been doing it. And there's a lot of niches that companies get into, I feel like. So we focus on the 3 to 8 megawatt systems. We like to know our customers, you know, focus on.
Not to cut you off, but even just hearing 3 to 8 megawatt, like right now we're based, right now I'm in British Columbia. Mm-hmm. And the largest rooftop solar array in British Columbia is 1.2 megawatts.
Is it really?
And so just to hear that you focus on 3 to 8 megawatt systems, plural, just goes to show how far ahead already, even though, you know, in the scale of maybe Arizona, California, you're not there. You know, it's just cool to see that that's just a thing that happens, 3 to 8 megawatt systems.
So, you know what? I should clarify that. That is an excellent point. So most of those are going to be the ground mounted systems.
Right. Like a solar farm type thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
Exactly. And so the bulk of our work is on the ground mounted side of things. We do a lot of rooftops as well. So when I say the 3 to 8, that's primarily going to be the ground mount. Utility systems that really interconnect into a substation or a transmission line or something like that.
Well, and even that, I mean, in Canada and different provinces, there's different utilities, obviously. In British Columbia, BC Hydro. Hydro is the main source. Mm-hmm. And they kind of have a monopoly. And so there is not really many solar farms that are over 1 megawatt.
Wow.
Because it is mostly hydro government.
Sure.
Now you go to Alberta, the kind of wild west of fossil fuels and renewable energy. There's definitely more utility scale solar array, solar farms popping up over there. In Tennessee, I guess, what is the main source of energy? I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm not from there. What is the main source of energy in Tennessee, and what is that? How does solar fit into that?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a diverse portfolio at the moment. And so there's some nuclear, there's some natural gas, there's some coal, and then there is really just this, we're kind of at that precipice of really starting to adopt and install solar right now. So a little bit all the above, which to me is part of the reason the Tennessee Valley and Tennessee is grown is because the electricity, it is very reliable and it is very affordable. And so the TVA, who is the generator of all the electricity in our area, they've done an excellent job of it. And so basically, yeah, so now they're starting to roll out some solar, and they just issued an RFP, and it took them a while to collect the responses. But so 6,000 megawatts is what they plan to install and interconnect into the grid over, I believe, I want to say it's the next 10 years. I think 2035, wow. Give
this
or take.
This is Tennessee.
And so it's the TVA Valley. So you've got Tennessee kind of being the headquarters of TVA.
Okay.
But they cover parts of Alabama, parts of Kentucky, you know, and some neighboring states as well.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a little, we'll call it a 4 to 5 state spot in the Southeast.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a large amount. And that's why it's also a neat time to be in the Southeast. I mean, you feel like you're really at the precipice of some huge growth in renewable energy. I think the economic viability has been proven, and there are some strong government policies in place that are pushing it. The Inflation Reduction Act, which Biden passed, has been helpful. It kind of solidifies that 30% tax credit, and there are some kind of additional kickers that can qualify and can help the investment in it as well. But ultimately, you know, it's being driven to me by the private sector, which is great. And we're really feeling like we're at that part where we're starting to kind of catch up. And so just for a point of reference, you know, we focus on 3 to 10 megawatts, as I said, which most companies that do what we do would say that's very small. They actually call that distributed generation. And so in other parts of the country, it is very common to see 150 to 200 megawatts per site. Which to me, that's the thing that gets a little mind-blowing. When you're talking about New Mexico, California, Arizona, some of this land that is not the most usable is actually perfect for solar. It's flat. There's not much cost involved. It receives a lot of sun. So you get a high amount of generation. And so they have been doing that for a while. And so to me, I do think the Southeast part of the United States is going to start getting a lot of attention for the growth that it receives. And if you're looking at growth of people, so during COVID and even in the years after, there's a lot of growth in the Southeast. And so you have a lot of businesses moving here, and you have a lot of people moving here. And so that has put the grid kind of under strain for a while. And so there's a lot of things happening. And so it's almost like a catch-up phase that the Southeast is in with the growth in business and people moving here. So yeah, it's exciting. And it does bring competition, like you said.
Of course, people
know what's happening around this area, but we feel like we're in a good spot. And we have that niche of that 10 megawatts, and we'll see where it goes.
The future is now. The Solar PV Cast by Shift.
You touched on it earlier, but there's such an opportunity for education, because even now, even in a place, you know, that's ahead of us, we're constantly asked, well, solar doesn't work because it's cloudy. You know, we have the net metering program. You can bank it into the grid and use it on those cloudy days. And how do you find the perception of the average person in your area? Obviously, the private sector is well aware. I hate to use the word trendy, but, you know, everyone is looking for another answer, whether that's renewable energy, whether it's for the environment, investments, whatever the reason is, a lot of people are looking at renewable energy for other reasons. How do you find the perception is in Tennessee of your everyday person down there? Is there a knowledge that solar is an option?
You know, it's funny, and you know, there's still probably a little ways to go with that, and so you just hear you it's to me it's you miss out on some of the data and the facts when you kind of just go to me based on, you know, emotion or things that you've heard and kind of, so I do think there is a little bit of education that needs to take place. And I think, and it will, and people are starting to come around to it. And that's a good thing. I think, you know, the education, so there's a little bit, there's like a land use issue to where, you know, there's a lot of people that are anti anything out there. And so, you know, there's a movement now to where people have heard that the adoption in Tennessee is going to increase for solar. And so they're kind of like, you know, well, what's going to happen to all of our land? You know, are we're pushing farmers out? And it's like, when you really look at the facts, it's even with PVA's aggressive plan for the next 10 years, that would just be 1% of the available land in the state of Tennessee. And so, you know, if there's still a ways to go when it comes to it. And what I enjoy educating people on, and this is kind of the business side of it, is the economics. And so it's huge. I think a lot of people still assume that if you're going to, as a business or as a person, if you're going to invest in solar, you're doing it for the, you know, you want to save the polar bears or the sustainability side of it. And that is important, and it is something that drives everything that we do every day. But when you really get into it, the economics are very good. And the innovation that has taken place with solar over the last 8 years is astounding. A lot of people focus on the innovation with storage, which is huge. Yeah, I mean, that's a game changer. But with solar, I mean, a panel that we would install 7 to 8 years ago would be like 100 to 150 watt panel. And now every day we're looking at 580 and even 600 watt panels. And so,
and that cost 10 years ago, it's down almost 90%.
Exactly. And so the whole supply chain, the efficiencies, the production of the panels, when you're looking at the footprint, I mean, because that's, as I said, with land use, footprint is a big deal. Whether it's on a roof or whether it's land, you know, you want to be conscientious of how you use it. If you can get 580 watts out of a panel as opposed to 100, it's huge. Yeah, you know I mean, yeah. And so there is, and so getting into the economics of how these things play out is important. So I honestly, we've come a long way. We do still have a way to go, and you know, I mean, typically you get exactly what you just mentioned, which is, well, the sun doesn't always shine, and I need electricity all the time, so it's not a viable solution. And what's really changing the game is storage. Mm-hmm. And so it's the prevalence and how that has come to play with renewables. Honestly, the two are linked at the hip. They really are, you know, whether it's wind or whether it's solar, there's always going to be intermittency with renewable energy, at least the technology we have up to this point in time. And so with storage coming along, it is the one thing that really just eliminates the intermittency issue that you have. So it's been cool to see just the journey, if you
yeah,
will, of
yeah. kind
of what's been happening with that.
Well, and again, our perspective, storage is a thing, and it's massive. Like you said, the first question, yeah, we get, well, I want power when I want it. This is useless.
Or what are you going to do on cloudy days? What do you do at nighttime? You know, exactly.
And so it's great that it's like energy storage is the thing. And we do a lot of kind of off-grid stuff. And the stuff that I'm familiar with is more residential. Definitely the commercial space is starting to grow more so in Canada. But we do a lot of residential. And because the cost of hydro is incredibly cheap in a lot of parts of Canada, people just feed the grid. No need to go for it. It's reliable grid, so there's no need for energy storage. But it is, it's a thing. The lightning truck that you can plug into your house now, that's, you know,
yeah.
that's pretty slick.
Right? And Ford markets it as that. You can run your house for 4 days off of this truck. It's, it's crazy. You know?
Yeah. How do you guys find energy storage in what you're doing? And do you install that as well? Massive battery packs with these 3 to 8 megawatts? How does that work?
Yeah. I'm glad you had that. That is something I'm really, don't say kind of fascinated, passionate about right now. So yes, we do. And so you will see utility scale storage being installed by itself. And that is really just through times when you're not using, you know, and they plug these utility storage, like we're talking 200 megawatts of battery, up to the grid. And at times when it's not peak, they charge the batteries and then they will discharge them at times of peak. So you're seeing the large utility scale side of it. But because the growing commercial, industrial, and private sector nature of solar, there's, and I'm talking about the economics a lot, and so you can see it's something that we're talking about with businesses a lot. And so there is always going to be the utility kind of resiliency and stability nature of having batteries, and you have to have them if you're going to be utilizing renewable energy at this point in time. So that's a thing, and that's going to continue to be relevant. But what's really interesting about the private sector, so if you really want to kind of hit that economic, check that box, you know, most companies get 2 data points on their bills, their monthly bills. So if you're a large industrial company, you know, you're going to get your overall usage, but your peak and your demand is really drives costs for businesses. So, I mean, you know, the grid has to be set up. And so from utility companies, they get a very large bill for their demand. And that typically happens in the morning when you're firing everything up, when you're firing up all the motors, the engines, you're turning your lights on. If you're in office, that's when you spike. Well, at 7 a.m., that's not when solar is really at its, you know, at its prime production. And so if you can incorporate storage into the solar system, so you have the solar on the roof or wherever, and you're offsetting when the sun's out, but you're also charging that battery. And then as soon, based on what they call energy management systems, the software can read when you're pulling more than 100, more than 200 kilowatts. And so if you can reduce your peak shaving through the discharging the battery at those point in times, it really generates good ROI. So there's so many different uses for storage right now. So private sector, peak shaving, and then there's always the resiliency, you know, as the grid continues to get strained, rolling blackouts, rolling brownouts, people like to have storage with their solar. And so to me, there's a lot of trends going on. And that's a big one we're seeing. If you can address the demand and the peak through storage and through the software that allows companies to know when they start pulling more from the grid and discharge that battery, it's a huge thing that we're having discussions with right now. So it's cool. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah. Just increasing that knowledge. So, I mean, again, you're focused on utility scale, but residential solar, from what you know, is everyone getting battery storage as well? Are the two linked there as well, or is it still just solar? Because we're kind of, you know, people are just doing solar here right now.
Yeah, so that you use the term, and it's powerful, and it drives residential adoption, and that's net metering. So if you can net meter, which means, you know, we always look at usage profiles, and so, you know, the residential profile from 11 when the sun's out to 5, typically most people are at work, you're not using much, and that's when solar is generating. So you're selling back to the grid, and the investment makes sense. It's a good investment. In certain areas of the United States, they do not have net metering. So that is, or it should be, there probably are companies that will go sell solar out in those situations. But to me, it doesn't make sense on a home that doesn't have net metering unless you have storage. So totally. To me, that is kind of the driver of storage. Some places have net metering. You probably don't need storage on homes if it has net metering. Some places don't, and you have to. you should, I wouldn't recommend doing solar without storage, without net metering.
Totally. Yeah. Oh man. So many questions about all the things. What about building integrated photovoltaics? Is that something you guys, I mean, again, you're looking at the larger scale, so panels would make more sense. Do you have any input on the future of BIPV?
You know, not, you know, I, you know, so not a ton. I you know, through the experience that I have had and the utility scales focused around what we've done, I have not had too much exposure. But, you know, so educate me, tell me your thoughts. What are you guys seeing with you know, in Canada with that stuff right now? I am interested in learning about it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, BIPV in our eyes is the future. Every home, again, not utility scale, but every home we believe is going to have to be built with some form of self-generation, whether that's wind or solar or geothermal, whatever that is, it just makes sense. And so we actually have a product that's a metal roof with solar built in, which is pretty cool. So, you know, it's two in one. Your roof is solar. Obviously, Mr. Musk has his Tesla tiles. I don't know what's going on with there. They haven't made it to Canada. I don't know if they've made it into many states yet. They're having a tough time with that.
That is accurate. Yeah, we're finding the same thing. We could ask that question actually surprisingly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we know. So what's going on with those?
Yeah, we get the same one. What about those Tesla tiles? What's up with that? Exactly. I mean, it sounds cool, and the formula maybe hasn't been quite cracked yet, but I think in California, actually, any new build has to have some form of self-generation. Mm-hmm. That's just what I've heard. I'm not certain.
Okay.
So yeah, I was just curious on if that was maybe something that the Chrome Energy Group was looking at, or obviously maybe we're just not there yet. I just was thinking.
You know, so I am a big believer in, you know, right along that exact same path is just distributed generation. As we know, you know, by 2050, you need to double the amount of, you know, capacity on the grid. I'm not sure if, you know, $20 billion into a centralized power plant and then a lot more money in the transmission and distribution of that is how we're going to fix that. I do think that distributed generation where businesses are going to take, you know, responsibility for 20 to 50% of their needs, homes are going to be doing the same. And so, yes, I'm a big believer in distributed generation, and each, you know, people are going to have to be responsible for their electricity needs. And I do think solar and I do think battery are the main way that we're going to get there, because it's going to happen. And totally. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. So, and
yeah,
a combination of generation. It's a combination of, you know, energy efficiency, which is, you know, been a big focus for the state of Tennessee.
Yeah. Energy management systems, like you said, that ability to see what you're using, when you're using. Oh, if I, you know, use my battery during the peak times, boom, ROI speeds up. And yeah, it makes sense. Quickly, what about, you mentioned a couple times some incentives. A large reason, speaking solely on kind of the residential side, which is more what I know, even on the commercial, actually, the government put in a 30% tax credit for any commercial businesses that want to go solar or renewable energy. Is there a lot of support from governments in Tennessee and then your thoughts on America for making these transitions?
I do think so. Yeah, I think... I think, and you know, it's starting to come from both sides of the aisle as well, which is great. And I think when we look on a global standpoint, how we're going to compete, you know, and compete sounds negative, but it, you know, with Europe, you know, with China, but you know, how we position ourselves and how we compete with those countries, I think, you know, the race to winning clean technology is really important. And I think people realize that. And I think the average individual is starting to realize that as well. So, you know, I mean, Ford and Meta and Google and Amazon, you know, they're making these decisions based on their shareholders and the stakeholders. And, you know, that sentiment is starting to have kind of a ripple effect through the government. So when you start to get that unified front, it's powerful. And I do think the government is responding to that, and they're starting to put some real initiatives in place, which is helpful. It really is. Any way you look at it, it's creating a good environment for investment, and it's going to take money. You know, when you talk about the energy transition, it's going to take people, and it's going to take money. And you know,
Jobs, you know, we're going to lose a bunch in the oil sector, but I think we're going to get tenfold more in the renewable energy sector, because it's not only solar. There's so many ways you can go.
Exactly. I know, especially, I mean, we're seeing a lot of onshoring for the production and the manufacturing. So, I mean, you throw in the entire supply chain, you know, into these conversations, and it is, you are right. There's going to be that will be the biggest bottleneck, in my opinion, is the workforce and our ability to get people who can do that.
Yeah, for sure. And what's great about that is we can utilize people from all around the world. Honestly, China, mm-hmm. so far, like 300 gigawatts installed solar. I'm not sure on the states, but I think I was reading that they're the number one. They got solar panels floating on rivers in China.
Yeah, number one, exactly. And like, you know, talk about the education. It's like, well, you know, because you're here. Well, China's, you know, they're popping up a coal plant every day in China. Yeah. You know, they're gonna make goods for cheaper, but they're they are the number one installer for solar in the world right now. And yeah. So they know that's where the future is as well. And so I think we have to put ourselves in a position to do the same.
Yeah, brilliant. Man, I feel like we could keep going, but I think I asked for 30 minutes and we've gone beyond. So I appreciate you taking the time for this conversation, Ed, and giving us a little glimpse into what solar is like in the United States, and specifically in the TVA, I think you said. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Tennessee Valley, the TVA produces the electricity. So, man, thank you so much for having me. It was fantastic to have a conversation with you. And yeah, thanks for educating me. It was cool.
Yeah, let's keep chatting, man. The solar world is small, like we said. Ed Rotman, CEO of Chroma Energy Group, has been joining us on the Solar PV Cast today for a chat about his perspective and what's happening south of the border from us here in Canada, and what the future looks like. And again, thanks for your insight, Ed.
And thank you. You're very welcome. Nice talk with you.
The Solar PV Cast by Shift with Chris Palliser. To begin your solar journey, visit shift.ca.